You fellas have a lot of growing up to do, I'll tell you that. Ridiculous. Completely ridiculous. Can you believe these characters? Way out of line. Way out of line. I have a good mind to go to the warden about this. You know what hurts the most? The lack of respect. You know? That's what hurts the most. Except for the zombie takeout. That hurts the most. But the lack of respect hurts the second most.
Welcome to episode 460 of Zombie Takeout.
Zombie Takeout.
The B-Movie and Cult Movie Show. I'm John.
Hello, I'm Scott.
And before we get to this week's movie, we've got quite a bit of listeners submitted. A couple of things I forgot to mention last week. We had a long-winded... We were off last week. Week before last. Last
Life
episode.
Kicked us in the balls last week. Yeah, so here we are back again.
But yeah, 2 weeks ago, last episode,
yes,
in reference to our review of Carousel 2, the director, Steve Rudzinski, left a long response via DM after I DM'd him to let him know that the episode was up. I'm just going to hit the highlights. Let's see. First off, he pointed out that Duke did not rape Sarah in the first one. It was very consensual. And she was on top for almost the entire time, but then blamed him for making her cheat.
Hashtag not all carousel unicorns.
And Dan, all right. And Duke did absolutely kill her for that. She still gave birth thanks to magic.
Okay.
Carousel takes place near New York City. This is actually established in one of his other movies, Meowie's St. Patrick's Day.
Because obviously we have to review it.
Because the Meowie movies 100% take your place near New York City. So next thing is, he kind of took me to task for not recognizing him in his second cameo, because I recognized him in the Santa. It was him as Santa.
Okay.
I'm not going to spoil it, but he does appear in another spot in the movie. I am a little embarrassed because I follow him on, you know, Instagram and Twitter, and yeah, I've seen quite a few pictures of him. I still obviously know him, recognize him well enough to know his eyes from in the Santa beard, but didn't recognize him in the other scene. It kind of weird. I'll admit that.
Did he really pull the "Don't you know who I am" with us?
He said something along the lines of, "Not to be mean, but I'm honestly legit amazed that you didn't recognize me in, you know, X scene."
It's a credit to your acting ability, pal. You disappeared in the role.
Next, we have an email from Mark McConnell, who played Klaus in Carousel 2. For some reason, this went to my address and not the show's account. I don't know why. Steve Rudzinski sent me this link, and I just wanted to say thank you for the great review and kind words. I'm usually a stage actor, so that's why my IMDb page is bleak, and most of my short film credits are not on there. I love that you understood the satire of the movie so well. I was belly laughing through your entire review. I will certainly be listening to more of your show. Your chemistry is great. Thanks again. Thank you, Mark.
Thanks.
And finally, we have a voicemail from Bodo in reference to this week's movie.
Dirty Work. I love this movie. Chris Farley. Norm Rickles. Batting 1,000. 1,000,000. 1,000,000,000. I give it 4.5 braids. D-D-D-D-D-D. Time for a health update. I found out I have some prostate issues. My counts are way up and everything like that, so I'm on a severe diet, and I will try to respond when I can. And if things get better and worse, I'll let you guys know, because you guys are like part of my extended family. I guess the moral of the story is, make sure you get your pet spayed or neutered. Wait, I don't quite think that's it. Anyway, keep up the great work. LTS. Peace.
Oh, man. Hang in there.
Yeah, good luck with all of that, Bodo. I think you'll probably agree with this review, if I'm going to just speculate on that early. Now, I've mentioned the text-to-speech on Google Voice a couple of times in the past. When we were doing video, I would put it up, you know, when the voicemail was playing, for moments like this, because Don Rickles turned into All Wrinkles.
All Wrinkles. He'd love that, too, I bet. Yeah.
they would have. And finally, on to this week's movie, which is from 1998, Dirty Work. This is, of course, our Norm Macdonald tribute. And of course, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary, sponsored by Famous Aldo's Pizza. Exactly 30 minutes or less, or it's free.
Also brought to you by Don Giovanni for the ultimate sensory experience. I could just imagine them all wearing St. Vincent wigs in the middle of the production. Mm-hmm. All right. So it's been a long time since I've had to do one of these from like more than a week earlier. Yeah. But here we go. We have our hero here who is, not good at holding down a job. And he loses his job because, of course, he cannot deliver a pizza within the 30 minutes allotted time. He says some shit to the boss that doesn't turn out to be true and gets caught in a lie. So he loses his job. And because he loses his job, he loses his girl. So it's like pretty much... You start off with the whole country music song right away, which would have been better than the Third Eye Blind that they played at the beginning. But, you know.
That costed a half brain, Noah.
You know, I think I agree with you, actually.
There. I had to quickly unmute my mic to say that.
So they're trying to decide what they can do, him and his buddy. Who they trace, of course, their relationship from school kids to the present, which, of course, not much has changed because, you know, they're just, you know, a couple guys going through life destinationless, kind of, you know. And they decide there is one thing they can do. And I'm trying to remember how long it takes them to get to this conclusion, but they can. They are good at getting revenge upon people. And I think I remember how they came to the conclusion. It was the frat boys that beat them up in a bar, or at least beat up Norm in a bar. Mm-hmm. And they decided that they're pretty good at getting back at people. So well, that
after where... they needed 10,000, was it 10,000?
It was 50, I think, 50, wasn't it? Yeah. And,
one of them, the father of one of them needed a heart transplant.
What, their father?
Well, I was saving that for you.
Right. His friend's father needs $50,000 to get an organ transplant. Well, actually, it's the doctor who is...
The doctor's in debt to a bookie.
If he can get $50,000, he'll get his father, despite being incredibly old, an organ transplant. And that's pretty much all the plot you need, actually. Mm-hmm. So they go on their they actually build a brick and mortar or get a brick and mortar storefront for their revenge business. But they find out the secret that Norm finds out the secret that his father, his friend's father, is really his father too. But he doesn't want him to tell his friend that he.
And the way he found out was interesting. The proof, I should say.
The lockets.
The father has a locket with a photo of him having sex with Norm Macdonald's character's mother.
And then towards the end, when he, of course, eventually does tell the secret mm-hmm. to his friend, and he shows him the locket, too. You cheated on Mom, it's... You know, well, who do you think took the picture? So we have they go on this revenge for hire business. I don't know if you just describe the various bits of revenge that they pull, but
they go to sex workers.
They his army of hookers, his loyal army of hookers, I think he called them. But of course, one of his revenge plots goes too far. In fact, they're going to get the entire $50,000, at least they're promised for it, by a professional bad guy who I think is like the Christopher McDonald,
yes.
Played by him. Who, I mean, does that guy ever work with Dabney Coleman, I wonder? Because his whole career is just playing assholes. But anyway.
He's kind of a second-rate Dabney.
He's the next generation.
That's fair.
Dabney couldn't go on forever.
Right.
But he's promised the 50 grand, and they perform this horrible thing, which of course gets in the way of the girl that he's interested in. And but he decides he's going to work it all out, and of course has an elaborate revenge scheme at the very end involving the entire cast and the opera of Don Giovanni, and hilarity ensues.
Now, this is based on the short story Vengeance is Mine, Inc. by Roald Dahl.
Which is what my would be the meaning behind the title I wanted, Mitch and the Revenge Factory.
Yeah. The author of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory wrote the story that this movie is based on. That just kind of hurts my brain.
Now, of course, a lot of this is just taking Norm Macdonald and putting them in over his head.
It's basically just an extended sketch.
Yes. Yes, without a doubt.
And it was very, very edited. In his first appearance on Howard Stern in September 2008, Chevy Chase, who plays the Doctor, discussed the film's production release with Artie Lang. According to Chase, he was impressed with the original script's raunchy R-rated over-the-top tone, particularly a filmed but ultimately cut gag involving McDonald and Lang delivering donuts that had been photographed around their genitals. And Lang went so far as to beg McDonald not to allow any changes to keep it funny. Lang said the studio insisted on a PG-13 and moved the film's release from February dump month to June, where it had to go up against Godzilla.
There's a few things that sunk this, though. Because when they moved it is also when Norm Macdonald got fired from SNL.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if you're familiar with the story of Norm Macdonald getting fired from SNL, is that there was an executive at NBC.
I'm glad you brought this up because I was debating whether or not to put it in my trivia.
An executive of NBC was friends with O.J. Simpson, and he repeatedly would be on their case, not just Norm Macdonald's, but I think Lorne Michaels' case, to not do any O.J. jokes.
And it's SNL. Of course they're going to do O.J. jokes.
But think about it. It's 98. He could have easily stop doing OJ jokes.
Oh yeah, no wait. OJ was however, like 94.
Right, the verdict was like 96. Uh-huh. However, because he kept coming to him and telling him, "Don't do any OJ jokes."
Oh, he did more OJ jokes, of course.
He kept it going for two fucking years.
Oh god.
So, not only was this guy finally pissed with him that he fired him, he also pulled any ads from NBC for any ads for the movie to motherfuck the box office for them.
Mm-hmm.
But if there is if they could somehow do a director's cut of this, goddamn.
I think it would have been released by now.
Yeah, you're right. You're probably right. Although, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe with Norm's passing, that would definitely renew an interest, because this was kind of a punchline for or shorthand for a bad movie for a long time.
Which I don't think it deserved. Now, the opening narration, among a lot of things in this movie, is very dated.
Yeah.
It starts with Norm and Hardy's characters as kids and kind of establishing how they know each other and how the whole, you know, their friendship developed. And he just narrates it very kind of Wonder Year style.
Right. And his friend, played by Artie Lang, somehow picks up a Long Island accent that he didn't have as a little kid.
Yeah, yeah. Because Artie has a Long Island accent.
Oh, yes. Oh, my God. Quintessential Long Island accent.
I did like the popcorn in the engine gag.
Right. Very.
It felt like a step
genius
up from the banana in the tailpipe.
Yeah.
But
and then them being stupid enough to leave a trail of kernels
all
the way back to their office, and the cops saying, "Wow, either this is a mastermind or the stupidest."
Their first act of revenge is to pour popcorn, unpopped popcorn, into the engine of a car, which then goes out the tailpipe, And somehow they tracked that popcorn, Norman Hardy, all the way back to their office. I'm not sure how that works. Now, I do have to take some issue with the soundtrack, because it is very, very dated as well.
Oh, of course.
Like, imagine, like, the 90s teen comedy, take like half of those songs, stick them in this movie.
It's kind of weird that they would use that for this, but that teen, like, kind of movie kind of thing.
Like, simply mention Third Eye Blind, and to just take, like, that entire whole milieu from that period in the 90s. I was wondering if AC/DC was too expensive to license until they finally got there.
And I've seen some younger people not understand why the clothes are so big.
Yeah, that was weird. I mean, I got it, but I remember the 90s, but it still looks weird.
But that's how we rolled.
Oh, yeah. I was very into that look.
I think I rolled a little too far into the aughts too with it, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not going to criticize taking a fashion statement too far. I wore a fedora until 2013. it was kind of cool when I started wearing it in the mid-90s.
I lost mine when I melted when they opened the Ark of the Covenant. Mm-hmm.
Now, and you mentioned the shirt gag. The shirt they were wearing. The shirt gag where the guy walks past and, that's my shirt.
Oh,
that was really random.
Yeah.
Norm had to leave his car because of... What was the reason?
Did someone break the window?
That was later when he was sleeping. Okay. In the beginning, he had to... Probably road work. Because I think it was due to road work or something. He had to leave his car.
Right.
And that's just shortly after he found out he lost his job again. And
his girlfriend threw all of his clothes out into the street.
And then he's talking to Artie, and then the guy walks random extra, or not extra because he had a couple lines, but walks past random small part, and he says, "That's my shirt." Guy takes off the shirt, and he's got more hair than Robin Williams.
Yeah.
But it was just really random.
Yeah.
Also, the jokes about police beating people. Don't age well. I mean, granted, they're beating white frat guys, so it's a nice twist, but...
And the prank is to get the cops to beat... I mean, what they call it when you... when you send in, the 911 on somebody.
Yeah I don't
There's
remember.
There's a term for that.
Yeah, I don't remember either.
And it's not... It's escaping me right now.
Now, the pacing of this movie, we talked about it feeling like sketches... It reminds me a lot of Kentucky Fried and Amazon Women,
mm-hmm.
but not really in a good way.
I think it starts out a bit on the slow side, with the gags aren't quite as strong. Let's see, probably I'm trying to think of what it picks up. I would say it picks up. Well, actually, that bar scene was with Chris Farley. Does stand out now I think about it, so I can't say it was completely dead.
It picked up for me as it went along, but the beginning was kind of cringy.
The movie theater I think is really the point where
we get to that, because I think that's where it had me. Well, not had me, but that's where it got as good as it was going to get for me,
right?
Before we get there, I think the crooked doctor was an interesting angle. I've never seen that before,
right?
Also,
I almost forgot Chevy Chase was even in this, though, honestly. It could have been played by anybody.
And I have to admit, I laughed at what I call the stop by mooning.
I think I loved it, right? The gag, of course, is stupid. You're like, oh, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But then the way it ends.
Yeah. They're driving past these. Was it the frat guys again? No, it's a line to get into something.
It's just a line to get into a movie theater.
Right. It was a line to get into this movie theater. And Artie Lang decides he's going to moon the line.
The whole line, yeah.
And then right in the middle of it, in the middle of the line, Norm stops the car. And gets out.
Car and gets out.
And Artie's just sitting there with his pants down, like, okay, this is awkward. And then Don Rickles.
I think that sums up this movie best, is that there are like these really stupid gags, and they go in a direction that you just
don't see coming. I'm not the biggest Don Rickles fan, but I gotta admit, he was great until he got a bit racist. I mean, it was the late 90s, you know, but that was
Rickles. Rickles was like that up till the day he died.
He just kind of lost me there, but the rest of the stuff before that was great. They say the name of the movie in the movie. And then they practically look at the camera.
And it's they do like, you know, there's a cut scene, and of course, in the credits, you know. And during Rickle's scene, I'm wondering, because honestly, I'm falling out of my chair at the shit he was saying to Artie. And I'm wondering, like, why doesn't he give it to Norm as well? And of course, when you show the credits, the scene there, Norm can't keep it straight with Art with Rickles in his face. Right.
The shootout was good. They're taking revenge against this what you know someone claimed was a noisy neighbor who they wanted to get revenge on. I wish I could remember the characters' names.
They start the fish gag, which is kind of like an old story about like wife getting back the husband. So you know they put the shrimp in light fixtures or whatever. But here they're just going to do fish.
Yeah, they leave a bunch of fish throughout the house.
It's Mitch and Sam.
Mitch and Sam. They leave a bunch of fish, and then the owners get home, and they're doing a drug deal, a very expensive drug deal.
Right.
Large amounts of cocaine.
Right.
And, you know, they realize the owners are home. They freeze. Of course, there's a shot of them. They're just, like, frozen, holding these fish, trying to figure out, like, okay, how are we going to get out? And then the drug deal turns into a long shootout with this...
Because of them.
With this protracted shot of the two of them just frozen, holding fish. And they were just completely frozen, like the end of, like, a police... Was it
a police squad
episode?
It is one of my favorite scenes of the movie, honestly. And you're just expecting a dumb, "Ooh, how are they going to sneak out of this? They're going to get caught and embarrassed." And instead, this whole firefight ensues. And the best part of it, of course, is after everybody's dead, and they're trying to get out. Mm. They're walking out of the front door. You hear the squish. Yeah. Each step they take, you just hear.
Although I think my favorite gag was the broken phone.
Oh, what?
Sam, Artie Lang's character.
Oh.
Destroys this phone with a baseball bat.
Rickles calls them. Because, and of course, they had to figure out a way to get Rickles a little bit more use out of that than just that one scene.
Of course.
But yeah, he takes it out on the phone.
And then the phone rings. The receiver is broken in half. No wires connecting it or anything. Mitch has the mouthpiece in one, the earpiece in the other hand. No connection, but he can hear them.
Right.
Also, of course, they go to prison. You mentioned that.
Yes.
I love that Sam has never heard of prison sex.
Right.
Although, they actually did go to the prison sex scene. Not the actual scene, but Mitch is taken away and apparent, supposedly, you know. I would have loved them to have subverted that cliche and there actually was no sex.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like that was a missed opportunity.
But it just set up that wonderful Norm MacDonald.
Yeah.
The speech.
Yeah, the rant that you used for the intro was great. The tape recorder twist was bad.
They did censor that. Like,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
He says the anal sex, except for the anal sex. Well, or when, the anal when, rape.
you know what they do here, right? And you do in prison, and Sam has no idea, and he's completely naive. And Mitch whispers it in his ear, and it's like a good 10 seconds.
But in that speech, it's like he said, instead of saying the other thing, that's just overdubbed over, I think, either anal rape or anal sex.
Okay. Didn't catch that.
But if you they dubbed it.
Now, the way they catch Chris McDonald's character, the villain, is that Mitch has this micro cassette recorder that he's constantly, you know, recording notes to self on that he kept running during the you know, villain's monologue when he admits, yeah. I screwed you over. That was incredibly predictable. did not see the incest twist coming. when they find out, Mitch and Sam find out that they're half brothers.
And they're reminiscing, yeah.
Sam points out that Mitch tried to, get a peek up his sister's skirt, and that's actually his sister. And wait, didn't you bang her? Bringing back the brownies were a nice touch. They got involved in medical experiments product testing, actually, to make some money, and they were testing these brownies that had no effect on Sam, but caused Mitch to break out in hives and sweats and hallucinate. They brought them back for the big finale during the opera. That was a nice touch. I'd also liked the sudden ending, where he just has this short monologue at the end, Mitch, and he's like, and that's it.
Very much in par with the Norm McDonald's, stand-up style, right. Where it was a very Bob Newhart kind of delivery, a very absurd bolt to everything.
Since his passing, I've watched some clips, and I need to watch more because I like his style. As I've mentioned, I'm a big Bob Newhart fan, and they are very similar.
And when I got to see him, I think it was his last time in Chicago, because I think it was 2019, and his act was so weird. I mean, it was normal for the first 45 minutes, and then he just starts he takes out his phone. And he's just checking stuff on his phone in the middle of the act.
Oh God. Nice.
And then he just pulls up random bits and goes into them, and then he'll go back to his phone and just my routine ended half an hour ago. Really, I'm just making nice. Stuff up now.
Nice. Sequels and remakes.
Oh man, if someone could get a director's cut to this, that would be be the holy grail.
In 2018, when asked about a sequel, McDonald stated, "It was an R-rated movie, so I made it that way. Then they made it PG-13, so half the movie had to be cut. So it's hard for me to see it objectively. There might be another one coming now, I guess."
Oh.
He did not elaborate further regarding potential sequels. Of course, he recently passed.
Which is strange, because he was 3 years ago. That was 7 years into his bout with cancer.
Right. I think he was being sarcastic. I have no interest in it. They fucked me on this one, but who knows?
Yeah, that would be him.
On the brains?
On the brains.
I liked it more than I was expecting, but not enough to recommend. I'm going 3.
I'm going to deduct half a brain for Third Eye Blind and give it 4.5.
All right. And what have we learned?
We learned that when you get a car from Peterson's or Phillips Motors, you really should check what's in the trunk, because, they might not be dead.
And, I mean, if they are, I'm not going to kink shame.
Well, yeah, but, give them some air.
And I learned that the homeless are human beings and they have no homes. That line cracked me up for some reason. And that's it for Dirty Work. Until next time, we'll be reviewing Conan the Barbarian, another one of our Mandala movies, for me at least.
It's, there's a handful of movies, I think, or at least a handful of movies that we've had in this show, where we set out to review it, And then all hell breaks loose and keeps us from reviewing it for a good, like, how long have we been putting this off now? A month at least?
Well, that, yeah. But for me, like, well, Life Force was a Mandela movie where, like, we thought we reviewed it, but we hadn't. Conan is for me, too. I was sure we'd reviewed it.
Nah, I was thinking, I mean, we did, like, Beastmaster. Maybe,
I might be thinking of Beastmaster. Yeah. Anyway, until then, of course, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are. There you are.